Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown with myself, Joe Oberle from VikingsTerritory.com and PurplePeepTSD.com, and Mark Craig, NFL insider and Vikings writer from the Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. Mark, I don't know if I can take any more of these late night Wolves and Wild game. I know it's affecting you greatly, but I'm dragging in this morning again from these late night.
Happenings. As far as the Wolves, I mean, why are you wasting your time? The Wild. I would like to watch it, but I'm not staying up till.
Yeah, I know. We're just flyover country. I mean, the Wild are playing a central team in Dallas. You know, and there are two central teams. Why wouldn't you just start them at the proper time? But they got to get back to back to back, and then the teams have to wait for overtime in hockey. It's crazy. I was up till one the first game when the Wild had a double overtime game. It was worth it, but boy, I dragged tail the next day. So I'm dragging now. I'm dragging into Vikings content with that big intro there. So anyway, you weren't watching those guys. You were sitting in on the media accessibility for Kwesi Adolfo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell and a bunch of the players. And I know you've gleaned a lot out of there. So we'd like to talk about that. Mark, right out of the gate, what did you hear from Kwesi when he was addressing the media?
Well, I mean, you know, Kwesi was asked about Za'Darius Smith and Dalvin Cook, obviously two guys that probably won't be on the roster, guys that didn't show up at their off-season program started, you know, last Monday or this Monday. It was very non-committal, the discussions are ongoing. You know, basically it's two guys that are probably dug in. They're not going to take a pay cut. Vikings are trying to get them or get them to take a pay cut. And eventually they'll probably have to release them, I would guess. And he said, was asked, you know, since you committed to Madison, a pay raise to Madison, which wasn't a huge pay raise, but it was right. A pay raise. Could those two exist in the same backfield? And he said, yes, in theory, you know, and then he went on to explain that there are two different backs, all the things that we know, there are two different backs. So, very non-committal, very kind of lukewarm on those two was probably the biggest takeaway, you know, kind of, you know, you knew they were going to be asked about it. And as far as the quarterback, you know, they say it kind of in a nicer way than some other people say it, but it's a pre-draft meeting, which is a lot of talking, especially with Kevin O'Connell. A lot of talking, but not saying much. There is an interest in a quarterback, but I, you know, you come away from it, and we'll talk here a little bit more about what Kevin said. But you know, they're not just going to take one to take one, and so it has to be the right guy. And by all accounts so far that you see, and based on the talent of the quarterbacks that are there, you know, they're probably looking at the fifth best quarterback available, which I kind of came away reading between the lines that, you know, they're not going to settle for a Christian Ponder at 23.
Yeah, that's kind of a good thing. You said,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me jump back to, the running back and Dalvin and Za'Darius, you know, it's just difficult. Have they played this wrong? Because now everybody knows their Vikings are probably going to have to release him. They wouldn't trade for him, you know, at this point. Even there were talks that Dalvin was part of trade talks, and clearly they didn't get what they thought they might have or they wanted out of him. So now they're going to have to, if they can't get him to make a pay cut, they're going to have to release him. And that's, the Vikings get nothing, don't they? They don't even get a compensatory pick the next year, because if they just release him, right?
Right. And you also get dead money on it without the player. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think Za'Darius is dead money is high, but Dalvin's money is, you save on him, but you also, you have a big dead money hit without having the player. And we forget, you know, through all this, we talk about financials, Dalvin Cook's still a pretty fantastic player and probably has got another year left in him as a fantastic player. But when it comes time to, like, whatever they need to sign draft picks, whatever they need to get through a season, you know, they probably you know, right now they're under the cap, so it's like
that's what I was going to ask. But why couldn't they just keep them now then, if they are under the cap? But you're saying they got to sign.
Well, you got to have your rookie class, and I'm not the cap expert, but you got to have money to operate in a season, and they did sign the cornerback from New England, so they added a guy there. So I don't know how much more they're going to add, but it's happened many times before. You get to the end of training camp, you think a roster's set, and all of a sudden other teams start releasing guys.
Good point.
Or you know it, you got two, three guys, or one, two guys show up that are on your team that are veterans that need to be paid. They go, we've seen it over, going back years and years. It's, whenever other teams cut guys at that point, then it's like, hey, that's a good fit for our team. So you got to be able to have the flexibility to do all that stuff is what.
So these are cap casualties. They need more room. They're not cut. They're not eventually either trading or releasing them because Dalvin had shoulder surgery or Zadarius underperformed at the second half of the year. They could use them on the roster. There would be room for them if all things stood
at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. At this point, but they need room. And that just seems unfortunate for Dalvin, who's, that his status has come to this point, because he has done so much for this team. I mean, when he's been in there, he's been exciting, dynamic. He's been injured off and on. He's played with a bulky shoulder for several years, and he's been just a fun player to watch. And if you're a fantasy football player, to draft at some point, if you're a Vikings fan. So it's a shame if that's what it's come down to, because,
he's also a running back. I mean, and those guys, when they sign these big deals, it's always just look at the guarantee. What's the guaranteed money? Because when it gets to be like, oh, he'll make $14 million in 2023 or $15 million or he's this much against the cap, that's not going to happen, especially a running back position when you get to be 28 years old. So it's an undervalued, it's for guys like us that grew up in the 70s, the NFL, the face of the NFL was always running backs. And that's been many, many years since that's happened. We grew up with Earl Campbell was my favorite player, O.J. Simpson, and even the Steelers, you probably talked to more about Franco Harris than you did Terry Bradshaw. Yeah, so that's going a little farther for me. I don't have memories of Gale, but now it's a position that's guys like Dalvin do have a little more in the tank, which is why they get the big contracts. But those contracts don't usually make it to the end of the life of the contract. So, it's one of those things that's probably gonna happen, but. The Vikings aren't a mission, but let's say, obviously with them being on the roster, if you go into draft night or, say the Vikings, say Anthony Richardson falls and it's a guy they really like and they decide they want to go up and try and get a quarterback. Suddenly, you trade Dalvin. Now, a team might not want Dalvin at his current price, so you might have to add a little more to that team would be getting Dalvin and maybe some draft picks and make it more enticing for them. So there's a lot that needs to shake out with what's going to happen with these two. They're in their hip pocket. They're being, they're being used as collateral right now for whatever they have in mind or whatever they're trying to put in play.
Well, just for what it's worth, watching Gale Sayers was one of the things that got me addicted to this game. That's all I can say. The guy was, I am old enough to have seen him play a bit. And one of the first biographies I read as a kid was Brian's Song, or it was actually I Am Third, which is a Gale Sayers autobiography. And then part of that was used to make that movie Brian's Song. But Gale Sayers was something else.
I've seen a few highlights. I watched the movie as a kid every year. It was like came on like every year at a certain time.
Right. Yeah. It's a good show. James Caan dies as Brian Piccolo, and then he dies as Sonny in The Godfather. He's had quite the career, getting these dramatic.
He's died as James Caan too.
Is he? I think he's still around.
Is he still alive? Okay.
I think so. I'm not sure.
Sorry, James. And he's a big fan.
I will have to look that up after the show. Anyway, to the quarterback discussion, you said that you asked Kevin O'Connell a question about that situation, and you said you had an interesting answer. That was you know, as media people do like to read into him or read between the lines and see exactly what he was saying and what he wasn't saying.
Well, what I like about Kevin, there's a lot of lines to read between. So it's and I crack on him for his, he cracks on himself for his answers too, because he's, you know, he's very verbose. So, but I just, you know, as Kwesi was talking about the quarterback position, you have, you know, now you have your quarterback guru there. That's the guy that's, you know, now's a good time to have a young quarterback, because you got the quarter, you got the coach that's, it's ideally made for. Just like, you know, when you drafted cornerbacks every year for 8 years, Zimmer was a good guy to have. So, and I asked him, you know, what, you know, how do you balance, you're wanting to have an elite quarterback to groom. I mean, he works with Nick Mullins. He works with whoever their third string guy is. But, you know, it's different. And they're going to be a backup. They're not going to ever elevate to a starter unless there's an injury. So you balance, you know, having an elite guy to work with versus, hey, you're a 13-win team, getting a guy that can be have an impact right now. And he said, you know, ideally, I'll read it here. He said, ideally, you would love to have that person in that role developing behind a great player like Kirk. I don't think you sacrifice it being the right player, regardless of when, the where, the why, the how. You can't sacrifice that. You have to have ultra belief and connection on making the decision, because it is such an important decision. You know, and we're looking at where they are, and this is where you got to, like, you read between the lines. You know, if they're up in the top 10, you know, you still think, well, you know, there's going to be one of those three quarterbacks that they can get, or, you know, top, it might have to be top five to get one of the top three. But they're, you know, I don't know that fourth quarterback, which some say could be Levis, some say could be Richardson, they're not going to be there, I think, at 23. So, and I know we've gone through, like, talking about them taking the Tennessee guy who's 25 already. He's coming off an ACL. Needs, you know, not that he would play this year anyways, but you just start thinking that, you know, that's where it tells you it's got to be the right guy. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing, you know. So if they don't take a quarterback in the first round, you know, and I'm sure that, like a lot of teams, they like, there's a couple guys that next year that are supposed to be really good, and maybe even more than two next year. So I feel like the thing is that what they're doing is they're putting out, you know, feelers, they're putting out inside the building, outside the building, that, you know, they're not just going to come to the end of Kirk's contract and go, oh, yeah, we need a quarterback. You know, they're thinking about it now. They're really, you know, focusing on it right now, because, you know, O'Connell knows, you know, that you know, he could have a great defense, but if he has Nick Mullins next year as a starting quarterback, it's not going to be any good.
What was the question you asked? Just curious.
That was specifically just, how do you balance between wanting an elite quarterback to groom for a year versus, hey, you know, we want our first round draft pick to come in and help, you know, get over the hump, you know, right. Help. I mean, they lost a lot. Not only did they lose in the first round of the playoffs last year, they took a step back personnel wise. You can say what you want about Brian Asamoah being a potentially really good player, but, you know, he's not going to step in and be Eric Kendricks right away.
Right.
Thielen, you know, was tail end of his career, but Thielen's not done playing. Dalvin Tomlinson, the Browns gave him too much money, but he's not some, you know, third rate player. Now, these are guys that need to be replaced. And so you know, to take a quarterback's great. Hey, we got a quarterback for when Kirk's done, but we got to play 17 games now. So that was the, how do you balance that?
Yeah. I was just curious. You got to watch, be careful sending KOC off on some philosophical question that he might spend a week answering, dancing around and getting. Anyway, I'm just having fun. Speaking of the quarterback, there was a note I saw on Twitter that bastion of truth and news and all the other stuff that's on there, that apparently Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com said that the Vikings had talks with the 49ers about the availability of a trade for Trey Lance. And they weren't the only, they were among several teams that did. And then I read that it came out at the combine. So it's pretty dang old news. Do you make anything of this? Do you think that that's a possibility? And would you even want Trey Lance coming here. I'm not in that camp myself.
Well, I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was saying about, you know, they've put out, I mean, this is a kind of a full court press to, like, you know, several avenues, you know, talking to the 49ers, because teams talk to people and they explore stuff doesn't mean it's happening. You know, it's
that's true.
There's a lot of
really, and, you should tell Twitter that.
That's why the refresh button, and then just like, what's, you know, that's now in today's world, the truth doesn't matter. You just, how can I be entertained in the next half hour?
Yeah.
How can I put a take on whatever is happening or maybe happening now? But yeah, I don't doubt that they talk to him. I feel like having a quarterback, I would like to see Kirk, and I think O'Connell would as well, see Kirk in year two of the same system for the first time since like 2015 with the same play caller. I don't know that, you know, I'd want a plan in place, but I don't think I want to give up Kirk Cousins right now for Trey Lance right now. You know, ideally it would be great to have Kirk Cousins and Trey Lance and go forward that way, but that's not going to happen. I mean, the 49ers are starting to say, hey, you know, even though it's amazing how quickly the NFL changes in less than 2 years, you know, they went crazy to get him to go up and get him at number three. And now, ironically, the last guy taken in last year's draft makes him potentially, hey, you know, if we have Kirk Cousins now, Brock Purdy when he heals and going forward, we're good. We don't need this guy that we absolutely fell in love with and went crazy. I think Trey Lance is going to be a good player. I think it's going to take a little time, but Trey Lance is the future of the NFL. I mean, playing that way is kind of the future of the NFL, and I think he's going to be a really good player. But I don't know that I'd want to be doing that right now with him. Whenever you think, hey, let's see how far we can go with Kirk after last year.
You think it? You know, you think that it would be Kirk they'd have to trade in order to get him?
I don't know, but the 49ers. What off? I mean, come on. Are we? Hello, come on, Joe. The 49ers would trade Trey Lance without getting Kirk Cousins and
Dalvin Cook, Za'Darius Smith, Daniil Hunter.
But Trey Lance is their quarterback of the future, and Brock Purdy has just had elbow surgery, so Brock Purdy's probably not able to play right away. Plus, I don't know that you go into a season with Brock Purdy thinking that you're going to just repeat that 5-0 finish last year.
I don't think. Yes, I agree. The Vikings don't have much else to trade. You know, I mean, the 49ers are a full team. They're just missing some the quarterback that they can rely on, because A, Brock Purdy it looked really good, but he's been injured, and B, they don't like Garoppolo anymore. He's even on the team, and they clearly don't like Trey Lance. So I mean, you'd have to trade them somebody to step in. And
well, I don't know that. Why do you say clearly they don't like Trey Lance? I mean,
they're trading him. They don't like him as much as Brock Purdy, I guess. If that's
That they're exploring. They're exploring options as well. They're thinking, hey, if we can get Kirk Cousins in here for year, you know, for a year or two, and then Brock Purdy, you know, Brock Purdy goes back. You know, Brock Purdy obviously elevated his stature by what he did as the Mr. Irrelevant. But you know, he's injured.
So why don't they put?
And, you know, that's a major injury that he had. Got to come back from that, and then he's not like, just because he what happened last year doesn't mean he's automatically, hey, he's, you know, he's Joe Montana now. Let's go. You know,
I'd trade him if you and they thought that Trey Lance is going to be this quarterback of the future in the way that, like you were saying, the way the league is going. Trade Brock Purdy. Put a lot on the table. You might have to wait for him a little bit, but you got to wait for any quarterback that you're developing.
I don't know if I think Brock Purdy was it's like people look back at them. I covered a 99 draft. They had those three quarterbacks go at the beginning, and you know, Tim Couch goes number one, and Donovan McNabb goes like they're three, I think, to Philadelphia, and it has a good career. He should be in the Hall of Fame. No, not in the Hall of Fame. But Donovan McNabb was a good quarterback. You know, flip those. Tim Couch was a bust in Cleveland, obviously, but he was an expansion team. So, but flip those situations around. Tim Couch could have the could have had the career that Donovan McNabb had. Donovan McNabb would have washed out. So I think Brock Purdy is a product of a very solid, well-balanced team and a very solid coaching staff that can identify traits even at number 262 in the draft and plug it in and get him up to speed. That's why, you know, Kyle Shanahan was my coach of the year last year.
Well, that they got my vote for coach too, though. I mean, isn't that a little bit luckier that he played that well, because they had they were having trouble trying to figure out Garoppolo, Lance, or this guy. I mean,
you know, I don't think it was luck in any way stretch. I mean, the way he played, he didn't commit turnovers. He completed a high percentage of passes. He worked within that system, and they have good players. That's sort of like, you know, Kirk's very, you know, all quarterbacks ultimately are similar. You know, you can only do so much unless unless you're Peyton Manning or these guys that can carry, I can really erase all the problems on your team. You know, if the 49ers were terrible and Brock Purdy steps in, he's not going to be, you know, some miracle worker. He stepped in, he had the skills. They identified the skills, how it matched their system and matched their, the way they do things. And it worked out. I mean, it's like we all wrote them off. We say, oh, this is good for the Vikings. And now the 49ers are done. You know, they lost Lance and then, but they only have Garoppolo. But when they lost Garoppolo, it was like, oh, they're done. They're completely done. And, you know, credit to Shanahan and credit to the ability, their team, that, you know, they just kept kept winning games. Now, obviously, they got dismissed from the playoffs when Purdy got hurt and there was, they couldn't even throw a forward pass. I mean, they were basically a 1940s, you know, formation where they're like, well,
you're kind of football.
Yeah. I couldn't use Gale Sayers.
The 49ers doing it right. I mean, they had Garoppolo, who was a serviceable, decent veteran that could step in and play, may not take it to the promised land. Well, then they sold out, went and got Trey Lance. Meanwhile, they took a flyer on another guy who they had identified as, and if he works, good. I mean, they are doing it right. The Vikings, on the other hand, have, you know, went and bought a veteran and hoped that they worked out, and then every once in a while they take a shot at someone like a Christian Ponder or a T-Jack, and it just never pans out. You've got to be identifying someone like that every year. That should be what the 6th and 7th round picks are for. You know, and the Vikings have done that, but just not enough and certainly not successfully.
Well, I think, you know, I think what the difference, and I, you know, I love Zim and everything, but I think right now you have a guy who's, you know, played, you know, he wasn't a star player. He barely played, but he plays the position. He calls the plays. He's the guy that's going to be working directly with him. He's got the, one of the two strongest voices in the franchise. So, you know, right now they say it's you know, all when these guys come in together as GM and coach, they're always, you know, we make all decisions, you know, together, but ultimately one of them, you know, when things go bad, you know, the quarter, they don't leave, you know, arm in arm together. They leave pissed off at each other, but right now they're working together.
Yeah.
And everybody else that's ever, been down that road. To me, it's like right now, I think Kwesi trusts O'Connell, and O'Connell has a pretty good eye for the position. So you're not just going to be drafting. I think Kellen Mond was a one person draft. You know, Zimmer didn't want him. Rick Spielman did. Now, Rick Spielman, you know, has a lot of, you know, strengths, but I think picking a quarterback in the third round is probably not one of them.
Yeah.
So you have a situation now where I think it's, you know, yeah, you're right. And last year when the Steelers drafted Kenny Pickett in the first round, they drafted another quarterback in the 7th round. So you just keep, working that position. You've got to, it needs to be at the forefront of your mind a lot. And it's easy, like maybe to do that whenever you got, the veterans that the Steelers had weren't going to be guys that were going to be long-term. Trubisky's not going to be long-term. They weren't paying him that much. So you get a quarterback in the first round. That's a, you know, if he can play, then that's a gold mine for 4 to 5 years where you're like, hey, you know, we got a really good quarterback and we're not paying him a whole lot. And that's right. Where your window of opportunity to win is. That's where, you know, Seattle wins a Super Bowl and goes to another one with Russell Wilson on his rookie contract. Now, 10 years later, Denver's got him as an older player who last year looked terrible. And so they're hums. They got Russell Wilson. Yeah, we got Russell Wilson, but he's not Russell Wilson from 10 years ago. Yeah. Now they're strat. You know, Seattle got him and an affordable deal. Denver's got him, not as good a player, and a terrible deal.
All right, and that brings us to the bottom line, and this is the bottom line question. Then, you made some great points. I mean, if Kevin O'Connell is now, he's got the eye for the position. Zimmer didn't have that. I don't even know how much he concerned himself. He wanted someone else to do that. What's his name? Kevin O'Connell does. They are going to, at some point, tell me if I'm right or wrong, get a new quarterback on this roster this year, the draft, you know, because they've solidified themselves in other positions with some depth, maybe not be great, but now they can – with very little draft capital, they've got to take one, don't they, Mark, some way, somehow?
Well, I mean, if you just go back to O'Connell's question, it's got to be the right guy. If it's not the right guy and he's in the, you know, and he's in the sixth round, why take him? Why bother? You know, if he's not, I'm not saying that they won't take a quarterback, but I think that's goes against what he was saying and kind of and logic, really. Is like, why waste a pick on if he's not a guy you believe in? Like, some have said that the quarterback from Stanford, the real big guy, is a guy that the Vikings could potentially like. Maybe he's available later on, but with so few picks, maybe, you know, if he's not the guy, he's not a guy you believe that you can go forward with, then probably then not. You know,
that's sound, Mark. But I think, therefore, you know, then with O'Connell's eye, then you go find that guy.
He may not be there in the draft. You know, that's right. What I'm saying is he might not be there. Last year there were 9 quarterbacks drafted. You know, I don't know. That was a bad year for quarterbacks, but I don't know what a typical year is. But it, you know, if other teams take them and they're not there, what do you do? It's but
they're saying next year is even better. A better draft for quarterbacks.
Yeah, so let's say
doesn't trade away all our picks this year so that we can't load up and do something next year. But go ahead.
Well, here's another scenario that Vikings fans would boo the hell out of right now, but maybe potentially next year they celebrate. Say that somebody really wants someone in the first round. The Vikings say, you know, there's no one we like at 23. Maybe we drop back into the second round. We don't have a first round pick. But they pick up a first round pick next year and they go into next year with 2 first round picks, like a lot of these teams do, you know, and there's a great quarterback who's going to fall in a window where the Vikings could go to using that capital that they got this year. You know, it's one of those boo. Oh yeah. Great. God, you know, it's one of those, moments that fans have. You know, the Vikings are looking at this, you know, whether it's right or wrong, we'll find out. They got to prove themselves over time, but They don't look at just this year. They're looking at next year, the year after. You know, typically teams look 3 years down the road. So they could make moves that make people mad because they don't have a first round pick to talk about this year. But say they get an extra one next year, you know, and then it's like, oh, okay, now we can use this to do something. Kirk's contract's up, you know, but we got without the possibility of drafting this quarterback. I don't know.
Suffice it to say, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with the Vikings on draft night coming up at the end of the month here, very short time. So with that, we'll take a quick break. Mark, I know he needs something to drink and you know, take something to drink, and he needs to go watch some Gale Sayre highlights. So come on back.
Gale, who? He played for the Packers, right?
Yeah, that's right. Come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, you were out at TCO Performance Center talking not only firing questions at Kwesi and KOC, but you talked to some of the players, and a lot of them talked this week. Harrison Smith spoke, you know, who recently came, you know, was returning with, you know, I guess he took a quarterback or a contract restructuring and came back. And you said he talked about a big reason he took the pay cut to stay here was the Brian Flores. Can you talk about that a little bit? Defensive
coordinator. Yeah, and I'm always impressed by, you know, and Harrison Smith, his personality, his character is top notch, and always impressed by guys like him that, you know, they take the pay cut and then they stand up and they talk about it. You know, that's a hard thing for a lot of those guys, especially a guy like him who's been an all pro before. He's been 6-time Pro Bowl player. You know, he took a pay cut, 14 something to, I don't know, 8 something, but he gets $2 million in incentives. So he said, you know, he was honest. He said, you know, I did look around. I did think about, like, was it, you know, not taking the pay cut. Because, you know, Cincinnati was rumored to be one of the – because they lost a safety, you know, that they would be interested if he became available. And there were other teams. So he said, yeah, because ultimately it was right to come back. And he said one of the – he said, honestly, one of the major reasons was Brian Flores and that more aggressive defense. You know, Harrison was not like a lot of guys. The players, the head coach, the fans – Harrison was not a fan of the way they played defense last year, a very passive, very sit back type of defense. Harrison under Zimmer was a guy who blitzed, you know, a minimum of 35 times a year, was a guy who was used as a disguise, you know, in the box back little combination. We didn't see that last year. We didn't see him come off the edge much at all. So he likes that. He likes that style, and he's excited to be playing that way again. So that's a big reason why he came back. But, you know, Harrison's is a classic, you know, good personality. He used to take the bus down when he was – even whenever he became a star, he would take the bus with the rookies down to Mankato and get off the bus with them and, you know, when they checked in. I mean, nobody else did that. You know, yeah. If his stature did that.
He's a leader for sure on that team. It's nice to have him back, especially with a lot of – young guy's going to be coming back on the defense. Speaking of which, one of those guys is Lewis Seen, who messed up his ankle, I believe, or his leg in some form or fashion this year and missed the whole season. Never even got on as a starter, but was a good special teams player. He's kind of slated in to be a safety for the Vikings this year, and he's doing his rehab. He talked a little bit about that, how his rehab was going.
Yeah, I mean, he played last year. He played up until week 4 of the New Orleans game, the field on defense. By all accounts,
I didn't get much out there, but okay.
No, right. He played special teams in London. He caught his foot in the turf, the crappy turf that they keep putting out over there, and really mangled his leg and had to stay over in London and then come back, you know, like a few weeks later. All accounts, you know, by him, by teammates, by the coaching staff, he's, you know, making great strides. He's going to have a full recovery, be ready for training camp. You know, my question with him is not because, you know, the medical world now puts these guys back together unlike ever before. It's amazing what they do and get these guys back on the field. So that's not my concern. My concern with him would be, you know, before your injury, there were 4 games where, you know, the number one draft pick at a position at a place where the Vikings had a need, you know, alongside Harrison Smith, that guy could not mentally get on the field. He couldn't get up to speed quick enough to get on the field. That's my biggest concern.
Right.
Not, you know, physically, I think that, you know, he'll return. He'll be this dominant type physical player. But is he? And they're saying that he's also been like in really stayed here. He's really dedicated to like learning. The learning part of it. So that's what remains to be seen for me is can he get up to speed? You know, he's never played defense in the NFL now. So Cameron Bynum, you know, stepped in, but you know, Bynum and did a decent job, but Bynum's not a number one draft pick. No one's going to confuse him with a number one draft pick. So it's time Lewis Seen needs to produce this year, starting from day one.
I agree. It's the mental part that's going to be the biggest leap for him, perhaps. Hopefully that's what it is, that his leg is fine and he's the player that he was. Linebacker Brian Asamoah talked, and you know, it's kind of interesting with him, and almost everybody's got him penciled in as a starter this year after, you know, loss of Kendricks and and his ascension, the play that he did late in the year. So what did he have to say? I know that you told me that Jordan Hicks had some nice things to say about him.
Yeah, Jordan Hicks said he's one of the most explosive players he's played with. And, you know, Jordan Hicks was talking about, you know, Kendricks and what they're going to miss with Kendricks was like, you know, even Jordan Hicks in his eighth year last year, you know, he and Kendricks came in the same time. And he was like, you know, Eric Kendricks would say something that's going to happen. And he goes, 9 times out of 10, a few plays later, it happened. So, and he said that they're going to miss that. But he said that he has a good sense about Asamoah being a guy that wants to be great. You know, you can tell by how he was around Kendricks and Hicks last year trying to learn that he's gonna pick that part of the game up. And I was asking him about how long would it take you to get that, do you think? And he said he was already seeing some of it last year when he played like 11% of the defensive snaps. A lot of times he was kind of a shadow guy for the of the quarterback, and then played some whenever they rested starters at the end of the year. I do get a good sense about this guy. First of all, he's a fantastic special teams player, kind of a fearless guy. He made really a lot. I ended up writing about him in my 5 extra points multiple times because of something he did. And he called them old heads. He said, you know, Eric Kendricks and Hicks, we have a lot of old heads on this team. And he was talking about how he would talk to Kendricks about, you know, I had you and Ray Lewis on my wall, you know, posters. And so he really took to Kendricks last year. And Kendricks was an exceptional leader. He was kind of quiet earlier in his career, I would say. But I think he came out ever since he was kind of the voice of the Vikings and the NFL with the George Floyd situation going forward, really became an outstanding leader. And I think that, his personality, he took on this kid. And so I think we'll see good things from him, but it's just, let's not expect, you know, week one for Brian Asamoah to be Eric Kendricks. It's going to take some time.
Yeah, it's one thing that's good that they're still got a person like Harrison Smith out there and Jordan Hicks returning with some veteran leadership, because it's going to take a little. I mean, it sounds like Asamoah is going to get there eventually, but it's going to take some time for, you know, to adjust to playing every down and everything that the NFL throws at you. He was great in spot duty, but we'll see him as an everyday player, right?
Yeah, I think he has all the tools, and I also think my instincts tell me he has the attitude and the desire as well. Sometimes you don't see that in guys.
You mentioned earlier that the workouts have started, and they're voluntary at this point, and Danielle Hunter did not show up for them when they started. Is that a concern, or do we worry about the players put more credence into the term voluntary than us fans do and say they should be there for crying? It doesn't matter if it's voluntary or not. I mean, because Kirk showed.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you're asking certain people, like if you're asking fans on Twitter, then yeah, they're gonna be mad about it. He should be here and all this stuff. If you ever met Danielle Hunter in person, Danielle Hunter is not going to, his body's not going to miss, you know, doing a few jumping jacks at TCO. He's true. Taking care of himself. Let's put it that way. Yeah. You know, what it obviously is sending a message. I mean, when they redid his contract last year, he got a little more money last year, but all, you know, I'm not the cap expert. But I think all they did was take money from this year and gave it to him last year. So now, you know, he's not his pay for this year is not very high, and he's wanting, you know, he's wanting a restructure. I wouldn't be concerned at all. But you know, there's a mandatory mini camp in June. If he misses that, then you start thinking, well, he can miss some training camp. And then if you start missing training camp, then all of a sudden, I know they don't do a whole heck of a lot anymore in training camp, but there does need to be a ramp up to the season. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, needs something before they start playing. So, yeah, I would start worrying if he misses the mandatory mini camp in June.
Yeah, that's probably true. Kirk was out there. He's grinding. He's trying to get another extension. No, I'm just kidding. I think Kirk's happy for the first time in his career. So he wants to play football. That's a good thing.
And I think they compensate him pretty well. You mentioned he didn't have a workout bonus.
Yes.
I think that somewhere in, let's take a few million of that and just kind of pigeonhole it and workout bonus.
Okay. So what we're going to take a quick break now. And, go, and in light of that, this next question is voluntary. You don't have to answer it or not, Mark. So it's a voluntary question. I'll see how you.
All right, I'm out.
So that's what I thought. I was going to ask you how you're doing, but you know, that's it. We'll take a break and be right
back.
We
don't talk about injuries, Joe. We don't talk about it.
Come on back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Okay, folks, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. Mark Craig is still out here cranking for us. Mark, a couple offensive players spoke, and I, you know, this is what you sent me about Garrett Bradbury, center for the Vikings. He said something to the effect that he gets better as the line as a whole gets better. And you said there's a note that 11 of the 12 linemen will be back for next year. Did you read between the lines on that one? Or what did you think of that?
I tried it. I agree to a certain extent. I mean, you know, I think he played better. First of all, he wasn't like, I don't think he was completely torched by PFF, you know, Pro Football Focus.
Yeah.
Obviously I don't subscribe to like everything they say is gold, the golden rule, but usually when a guy is last and he's, you know, continually like the worst rated center for like a couple years in a row, they're not that far off, you know. He played a little better last year. Then he hurt his back, missed like 6 weeks. He talked about missing 6 weeks and then coming back and starting the playoff game. He said he was ready, you know, but you know, he had never done that before, taking 6 weeks off and then tried to step in and play a game, let alone a playoff game. And I don't think he, you know, if I remember correctly, there were a couple of times where he got, because the Giants have at least, I think they have those two tackles in the middle, or at least one that was all pro, and pretty good players. And he got kind of tossed around, I think Garrett did. But I agree. You know, I think Ed Ingram, Ed struggled last year. There's no question.
Yep.
But Ed was there. Ed played every snap of a season in which they won 13 games, went to the playoffs. So I think he's going to be better. You know, I don't think they run out and, oh, we got to replace Ed Ingram. That would be kind of foolish, because let's see what he can do in year two. And I think he'll be better. And as he gets better, Bradbury's a little better. Ezra Cleveland, I don't think had as good a year. I don't know what I haven't seen what Pro Football Focus said about him, but my eyes told me that I noticed Ezra Cleveland, you know, not being as good more often last year than I did. And I can remember in previous years.
Right.
But yeah, there's a common, you know, the line really needs to play together. There needs to be continuity. And yeah, I do think it helps that they're all back. Cause you know, they don't need tackles. And I don't think they need guards, and they brought Bradbury back. So, you know, to me, I do agree with that. As the line gets better, he's going to get better. And he also talked about having, Chris Cooper, their offensive line coach, who's a guy who played 8 years in the league for the Broncos, kind of having a little better style, a more understanding style of how to coach the position, how to teach them scheme. So yeah, I think year two of that, we'll see.
Yeah. The cynical guy like me could read into that and say, well, aren't you supposed to lift up the line and make it better? This sounds like a cop out a little bit. I know it's not. I agree with him too. They are a unit that's always, you know, for as long as I was out there getting quotes, Lyman always said, you know, the more we play together, the better we're going to get. And that's kind of what he's saying. But it's also like, I don't have to get better until the line gets better.
Well, I think you got to be realistic. Yeah. I mean, and granted, you would think that could be the case with him being a first round pick. Those are the kind of things that are reserved for. Like Indianapolis with Quentin Nelson, who's a seven-time All-Pro or whatever it is. I mean, he was great as a rookie and just great, 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 great. And he's the kind of interior guy that would lift the line. It's one of those where Garrett is who he is. And he was enough that, I mean, he played well enough in a new system that they brought him back. And very possibly they could not have made an offer to him. I think that he did want to stay. Probably wasn't going to get a whole lot of huge offers outside. So sometimes you take it with a grain of salt when a guy says, "Oh yeah," as soon as they made the offer, it's a no brainer. I'm coming back. And then they mention, they go through the laundry list of, the area, the teammates, the blah, blah, blah. But typically if some other team is throwing, a zillion dollars at you, that stuff kind of, I'm going to go over here to the money. He took the money. And I think he does have the potential to, we weren't talking about it as much last year. So that's
true. That's true. Well, speaking of burgeoning self-confidence, KJ Osborne spoke. And according to you, he was pretty good to listen to. What did he have to say?
Well, he's obviously the number two receiver, but he just I like his humility. I mean, he's talking about he was a backup. His dad was the coach in Little League, and he was the backup running back. So I was like, I didn't use it, but I said, what happened to the starter? And he goes, yeah, he had the name of the starter. And, but I think that's an example of who he is. This guy has always been, that's kind of the cliche story. He came from nowhere, blah, blah, blah. He's not Adam Thielen. He did get drafted, but this is a guy who's, he wasn't a starter. A late bloomer, went to college,
cut off the Vikings by Zimmer,
Well, in his first year, he didn't play. He didn't play any offense. Yeah. He was just a special teams player. And then, did he step up? I mean, there's games where he has stepped up. And I've said it last year during the season, he didn't need to have a 100-yard game and 9 catches for us to notice him. It was one of his first catches was a fourth down play. Kirk threw a ball that was a point blank bullet, a 4-yard bullet that Kirk threw with the velocity of a 40-yard pass. And this guy catches it for a first down. It's like, wow. And that might've been his only catch in a game, but I ended up writing about that, I think, for my story. Or in the third down conversions, or when everyone else is covered, he catches the game winner in Carolina 2 years ago. He had 2 100-yard games last year. So, yeah, he's a guy that's he's going to get paid too here eventually, and he won't get Jefferson money, but he's a guy that's going to be. Hopefully, they can keep him in their, in their financial structure because he's. But they do need a third guy. I don't know that they got that third guy.
Yeah. Did, when you wrote about it, did you call it the catch?
Yeah.
You
no, that the catch.
That was taken. That to me is refreshing to hear. I mean, a guy with that attitude the way you describe it, you can see where it's coming from. But in the age of diva at the position, you got somebody who's got humility enough and knows where he comes from and worked his butt off and it's paid off. And now he's got that position that just makes me want to pull for him even more, that he, and it makes me feel a little bit better that Adam Thielen's not here, and being the Minnesotan that I am, it was tough to see him go. So that's nice to hear. I mean, the way you describe him and his attitude and where he's been.
Well, yeah. I mean, Thielen was the anti-diva and honestly, Justin Jefferson, as great as he is, I mean, he does things. He has the gritty. He does all these things, but I don't sense diva in him at all. I sense a team player in him. There were times especially the one when there were no fans allowed in the games in 2020, and there was a ball in the end zone where he didn't throw it, and he got mad at Kirk, and just throw the ball, stuff like that.
But, yeah. Yeah,
you don't see. I don't see a problem.
I agree.
I don't see a locker room cancer or problem or anything in him. And I don't. Money could change a guy. More money could change a guy. But I just don't see it.
I'm not calling him a diva. I mean, he would earn that status. With everybody talks about him as the best receiver in the league. I don't know that he's that yet. He's darn close, but. Money really could change that. And I just hope it doesn't happen. Well, nice to have another guy who doesn't have that attitude.
Yeah, status-wise, he's the best in the league at his position. And he's becoming the face of the league because of how great he is and because he's got the gritty that's
won a playoff by storm.
So he's not going to lose focus. He's not going to lose focus of his craft and how good he can be, how good he is, and how great he can be. So
yeah,
that's a good thing to have, because otherwise you know like Diggs is a great player, but Diggs has to be, you know, coddled, and Diggs has to, everything has to be perfect for him, and otherwise you're going to lose him. So, you know, I don't think they're going to have that. And, you know, they got a lot out of Diggs, so that was good. You know,
yeah.
It was a win-win. That's a win-win for both teams.
Got a miracle out of him, for crying out loud. The safety that
put his head down and didn't tackle him.
Which I'll never understand forever. I just don't understand the defense on that play. Cowboys buried the lead this week with the Vikings did sign a player. You mentioned it up top a little earlier. They signed a new quarterback from the Patriots. Joe Juan, is that how you say it? Joe Juan Williams? Two first names and two different languages crunched together into one. I wonder if I should be then Joe Jorge Oberle. You know, no, doesn't
go matter. With it. Go with it, Joe.
Yeah. Anyway, do you think that reduces the pressure a little bit to draft one? I don't know that he's going to be slated as a starter, but, you know, I've been saying all along, you know, you need cornerbacks, just like Zimmer said forever. I see another one. The Vikings got another one. Does it allow maybe just not put so much pressure on that? They can wait in a corner-heavy draft. What are your thoughts there?
Well, yeah, I think it reduces the pressure, and I think they realized they needed at least one more going in, so they didn't reach on a guy. Not only do you need a lot of them, first of all, you got to fill out your starting and your depth, but then you got to start thinking, you know, these guys rarely do they make it through a season without hamstring, without calf, something going wrong with them, because they, you know, their legs are so dependent on the quick twitch of their legs and every this stuff. So you got to like just have a lot of them. You know, he's a 6'3", 215, so he's a huge corner. second round draft pick a couple years ago, 2019, I think. You know, Belichick has had a lot of good corners over the years, and he's also lost a lot of good corners and then just replaced them with draft picks. So it's a sort of a red flag that he becomes available, but. You know, so Belichick obviously didn't try to protect him or didn't try to sign him or extend him or whatever. He missed all of last year with a shoulder injury. So you have a lot of corners now that, you know, like, is Booth going to be healthy? Is Evans going to be healthy? Byron, the guy they signed from Arizona, Byron, missed games last year. So this guy misses all of last year with a shoulder injury. So they got guys in place. I wouldn't say that it rules out them drafting more corners. I think they will draft a corner at some point. But it's sort of just like every time they do that, you know, it's like, okay, they're in a little better position to take whoever they feel is the best player.
The cornerback room is going to be like a triage center. Okay, they'll walk in. Who's the least hurt this year? Okay, you guys are starting this week.
That's right.
Should be interesting. That was the new comings, but we also had a going this week, and it was kind of interesting how – everybody came out of the woodwork, former Vikings, current Vikings, who have you to talk about this guy, and he never played it down for the team. Dennis Ryan retired. He did not retire eternally. He retired from his position. Is that correct, Mark? Dennis Ryan, longtime equipment manager, 47 years, announced his retirement. So and a lot of people had a lot of nice things to say about him.
Yeah, my tweet might have been a little too Royce-esque. It was like I backed into it, I think. I kind of like said, well, you know, the Vikings have had two equipment managers in their history and blah, 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 blah. And then I said, Dennis Ryan is retiring. I think people did, you know, the way all of our minds work when we're reading something, we just like, you know, we got lost.
Or not reading.
So they, are not reading. A lot of that going on. They just, sorry to hear this. RIP Dennis, rest in peace. And it's like, so I tweeted he retired, he didn't expire, you know. So he's a classic. He was a guy that 16 years old, he's a 98 pound wrestler at Humboldt High School in St. Paul. He gets a job, part-time job at the grounds crew, work in Midway Stadium. The Vikings, you know, practice at Midway. They needed help, you know, Stubby Eason, their original equipment guy, needed help getting the team to and from Mankato. So, you know, he picks this Dennis Ryan at 16 years old. They help him, you know, bring him back and forth for Mankato. That leads to Dennis getting a part-time job whenever he gets out of high school. And then a couple of years later, he's 20 years old. Stubby has cancer. He misses the 80 season. He dies in the spring of 81. And the Vikings, you know, Bud Grant, they like this hardworking 21-year-old kid. They make him his equipment manager. And he's there for every single game from 1979 up until he had COVID the first game of 2021. He didn't see it. And the only preseason game that he missed was at Atlanta when his mom passed away. So, you know, Dennis was a great guy. I mean, as you talk to him, just the stories that he could tell about, you know, all the guys that, and very reluctant. He's kind of a shy guy. He doesn't like the limelight. But, you know, he tells stories like I don't think he realizes how great the stories are until you're like, wow, yeah, that's crazy. And one story he did tell when he was talking to all of us. There's a bunch of us that were talking. He was talking to, and he mentioned that Stubby had him go to Bud's room, dorm room in Mankato, Bud had all the playbooks. Bud didn't want the players having the playbooks out, so he had all the playbooks in a box, and he had 16-year-old, 98-pound kid come in to get this box and load him on the truck. He picks him up. The bottoms there falls out. Playbooks go all over the place. He said, here I am, you know, I'm on the ground trying to pick up these playbooks. I'm looking up, and there's Bud Grant staring at me. And he goes, it took me a while, a couple of years when I got to know Bud, that Bud did that on purpose. Bud had it set up to where the bottom wasn't taped. He wanted to see what Dennis Ryan would do. Well, you know, Dennis just quickly took care of it. And that was kind of like my
classic.
To me, it was kind of, for me, it's kind of a snapshot of like this guy, you know, he handled all these problems. And he told a story about how Stubby used to have a sign over his desk at the Met or somewhere that said, if we don't have it, you don't need it. And he said, times have changed. He goes, if I were to put a sign at TCO, it'd be, if you don't have it, FedEx will have it here tomorrow. Because he said, players today, expectations are higher. Yeah. You're going to get what you're going to get. They're going to get what they want. And then he told about like every game when Warren Moon was here, he would this came from Houston, and the Houston equipment guy told him about this, that every game in his locker, Warren wanted three pieces of Juicy Fruit, three pieces of Double Mint gum set there. And so Dennis Ryan did it for his first game, and then blew Warren Moon away. And then he did that every game. So you imagine doing that for one guy and then multiplying that toward taking care of all these guys and making sure everything is taken care of. It's a lot of stress on the job. It's a lot of physical work and mental work. So I'm going to miss him. He was a great guy to talk to, but he's almost 64. He's going to go on a vacation to Europe and then just watch games on TV. He said, I might even have a beer in my hand.
Wow. So. You know, I'm glad you said that he was kind of shy and out of line, like, because in my time there, 5-6 years in the locker room, I would, you know, you'd see him buzzing around, you know, always doing something, And I always thought, God, that'd be an interesting story to talk to this guy, you know, see. And I kind of made my motions towards him, and I would get this look from him that, like, no, you ain't talking to me, dude. I don't know you from that. I mean, it wasn't mean or anything, but I looked like, all of a sudden, I felt like, oh, my God, I better not interrupt him because he's got so much going on. But he seemed quiet. But someone like you who's been around there much more than I'm sure had inroads with him. And I'm sure he'd have some great
stuff down the road. I mean, it's amazing when you think of just how unfortunate that, you know, Freddie Zamberletti was a guy that you talked to and got stories from. He's gone. Bud Grant passing. Bud was a great guy to talk to and just tell stories and Dennis is gone. Studwell is
Burnsy.
Gone.
Burns is gone.
Burns is Burnsy's, you know, was fantastic to talk to. You know, Bob Hagans wasn't a big storyteller, but Bob has history with all those guys. So really, there's not anybody really left now from very long ago with the, you know, that were there. So it's sad, you know. Yeah. Sid Hartman.
Yeah, that's true. Gosh darn it.
You didn't sit around and listen to Sid's story.
It's it really is. That you wonder if that's goes into his desire to leave Dennis Ryan, you know, because all these people that he grew up with in the organization is gone. He's like the one last connection to that old time when
Gibbs. Well, he said, I think it's just time. He said, I still think I'm young, but I know I'm not. So, the combination of the physical that it took to do it, in 2020, he like had a compression fracture in his back, and he worked it through that. And he said, then 2 years of having a mask on, and he started thinking about it back then. And then I think once the bug got in his ear, and he said, I'm also kind of afraid of, like, cause you know, everything that, I mean, when they get on a plane to head somewhere to play, every piece of equipment is, it's up to him to make sure it's there. And he said, he goes, everything's up in my head.
He doesn't have an assistant.
Well, I'll just say, he goes, everything is in, you know, but if someone's missing something, it's the assistant's fault. So he said, everything's in my head. He goes, before I started having memory problems and stuff, because it's a good time to step aside. So they're looking outside the organization for the third equipment manager in 63 years. Wow. So that guy's got some big shoes to fill.
You did a story on him?
Yeah.
I guess I have to check that out in the Star Tribune. Probably get it online at this point. So that's worth doing, because that's all we got for this week. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for your stories. Great stuff as always. Thanks, Mike Woldum, producer behind the scenes. Thanks, Joe Johnson, for us being here. And thanks to you all for checking us out. We enjoy doing it. And really appreciate when you guys come in and check us out. So come on back next week. We're heading towards the draft, and we're going to wrestle Mark into predicting who the Vikings are going to take in the first round. So that'll be worth coming back for. Till then, thanks, and we'll see you next week. Skol.
Skol.